with the latest on the corporate front, all the market trends, expert opinion, and sound business advice. It is your unique window into the business world, direct from the heart of China.
Hello and welcome to Biz Today. I'm Zhao Yang in Beijing. Coming up, we will have half an hour of business news and analysis. On today's show, China's economy beats market expectations in the first 2 months of this year. And U.S. tech giant NVIDIA unveils its new superchip as it drives closer cooperation with Chinese EV makers. And now let's begin with our top story. China's industrial output grew 7% in the first 2 months of this year, beating market expectations. This marks a solid start for China's economy in the year 2024. Data released by the National Bureau of Statistics also shows that retail sales, a consumption gauge, rose 5.5% in the first 2 months. And meanwhile, China has issued a broad plan to further attract foreign investment. The new measures include expanding market access in the high-tech and financial sectors, facilitating cross-border data flows, and promoting international business travel. So for more on this, join us on the line now, Andy Mark, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for China and Globalization, and also Yan Liang, Professor of Economics, Willamette University. So Yan, I will start with you. China's industrial output grew 7% through the first 2 months, and also the retail sales was up 5.5%. So what does that tell us about China's economy this year?
Right. I think these are really positive and very promising signs that the Chinese economic recovery has regained momentum. And so if you recall that last year, you know, China has grown by 5.2% in the real GDP. So this year, the target is set at around 5%. So when you look at the industrial output, as you mentioned, grew by 7%, retail sales grew by 5.5%, fixed asset investment grew by 4.2%, and export has grown by, you know, by 10%. So all these point to that, you know, if we can keep the momentum, the year is probably going to end up with a 7% of a real GDP growth rate, as a matter of fact. But that said, I think, you know, there's still definitely headwinds. We have seen the real estate market still continue to drag down on the economy. Real estate investment has gone down by 9%, even though that has, you know, decelerated from last year's 9.6% of a contraction. We're also seeing home sales have declined, but again, that was slower than last December's sales drop. So I think overall the market looks bright, and I think, you know, we're going to see this economy with, you know, great economic performance.
Mm. And so Andy, so how do you look at the China's economy? And consumption was a key driver for China's economy last year. How do you view the domestic demand and private consumption this year?
Well, Xiaoyang, I think I would echo what we just heard, and to put it this way, I think it is not surprising. We see that the Chinese government has a long track record of promises made and promises kept. So the government, you know, as we just heard, is targeting about 5% this year. It was a bit more than a similar number in growth last year. So I think things are on track. I think what's very important to point out, too, is that some of these drivers, which I think we will talk about, certainly the consumption side is very important, but I think the industrial output is actually the foundation for any economy, and especially China's economy. So I think seeing this increase, a very, very solid upper single-digit increase, is a very strong signal and bodes well for the economic prospects for China this year and going forward as well. So I want to just point out, too, that what an important driver of these exports is electric vehicles. And this is important for a number of reasons, not only because of the direct impact on GDP growth, which, you know, is very easy to see, but I think what's easy to overlook for people that are do not have training in economics is that GDP is actually a very simple formula. It's consumption plus investment plus government spending plus exports, but minus imports. So we're seeing China's transition to a renewable energy economy, of which EVs, electric vehicles, are an important part. And this is not only a direct driver of growth through exports, but also it will reduce the need for energy imports, which will also have a positive effect, especially in the long run, on China's sustainable economic growth. And here I use sustainable in all its meanings, not just environmentally sustainable, but the ability to continue to grow for the foreseeable future.
And yeah, actually, China has issued a broad plan to further attract the foreign investment. So what measures impress you most? I think a lot of things, expanding, you know, the market access in the high-tech and financial sectors and aligning, you know, domestic rules with the high-level international trade rules, et cetera, et cetera. So what does that mean for the foreign investors when they consider investing in China?
Right. So I agree. I think, you know, some of these measures, I think it's very helpful to provide market access for foreign investors, like you said, in financial services and in general services. And also, you know, there's some promise that, you know, the healthcare industry, telecommunications, and so on. And also, you know, as you know, there's no more restrictions on manufacturing sector. So the FDI can enter in any of the manufacturing sector in China. So I think these market assets would be tremendously beneficial for foreign investors because, you know, China remains to be a really attractive market, you know, with the 400 million strong, you know, middle class. This is a huge market for investors. And on the other hand, I think the government has also promised, you know, equal treatments in terms of, you know, government procurements and in other sort of treatments. I think, you know, this would also give some advantages for some of the foreign direct investors because, you know, they're going to be facing the same kind of competitive environment as the Chinese enterprises. But that said, I also think that what is really important is that, you know, China remains to be a market that really delivers. When you look around the world, you know, China's target growth rate of 5% compared to, you know, the global average 3%. And when you compare that with, you know, the United States, European countries, or Japan and other, you know, East Asia countries, I think China's growth rate remains to be really solid and, you know, faster than other countries. So what that means is that, you know, China remains to be a bright spot, especially for long-term investment. So that's why you're seeing, you know, FDI, especially in high-tech sector, has really grown a lot last year, much faster than the general FDI. Now, again, I think there are still concerns from the foreign investors for two reasons. One is, you know, COVID lockdown has lifted, the economy has not grown back to the, you know, 9%, 10% growth rate. And also China is in the process of transition and structural transformation. So I think the foreign investors are also calibrating what to invest, where to invest, and when to enter the market. So that's why I think we're still seeing the foreign direct investment in January this year has, you know, fallen. That said, though, when you look at the numbers of the foreign investing enterprises that are being set up early, you know, this year, we have seen a huge increase. I think, you know, to the tune of 47% increase in these foreign investing enterprises in China. So I think that's a very interesting phenomenon. I think on the one hand, it shows that foreign investors wanted to come to China. So that's why you see so many enterprises being set up. But on the other hand, I think, you know, these investors are still being cautious. So they are investing a lot in high-tech sectors.
So Andy, so how do you view the opportunities in China?
Well, I think the opportunities for foreign businesses in China are good and getting better. And I think we only need to look at the fact that the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, is currently in China. And what he said while in Shanghai, I think, is very illuminating. So he said that it's the partnership between Apple and Chinese companies that really make things happen. We make it where 1 + 1 = 3 instead of 2. And that he goes on to stress the China's cultivating new quality productive forces and says that I think it is essential to the future. Mm. So I think what this tells us is, first of all, Apple, of course, is a very important company, in terms of its investment in China. But also, I think it has enormous symbolic value, and it also will have a galvanizing effect on other businesses that will likely follow the lead of Apple. Mm. The other thing I would say is we should look at Chinese capital markets. So the CSI 300 is up, I believe, about 5% since the beginning of the year. So it's very difficult, of course, to predict equity markets in China, but this is a very positive sign. So I think that there's a lot of things that are looking very positive at this point.
Mm-hmm. And Andy, we're actually seeing the investment in high-tech manufacturing industries in the first 2 months of this year, you know, increased by over 9%. And during this year's two sessions, the government pledged to allocate 370 billion yuan for science and technology. We know that China has already installed more industrial robots than the rest of the world combined. And the 10% increase in the science budget is also very big. So what has prompted this emphasis, and how will that support the economy?
Well, I'm glad you raised this, Zhaoyang. So as I mentioned earlier, industrial production is the foundation for long-term economic stability and prosperity because, of course, we need factories and machines to make consumer goods. So without a strong industrial base, any economy will be constructed on a shaky foundation. So I think what this really tells us then is the accuracy with which the government understands what is important. So not to chase short-term consumption gains, but to make the investments and have the strategic patience to build an economy that delivers growth in the short term, but also is able to deliver long-term sustainable growth.
Mm. And so, Yan, for China's economy, some Western media has smeared China's economy, saying it has peaked. And they talk about deflation, debt, demographics, and decoupling and de-risking. So what's your understanding of these different issues?
Right. So first of all, allow me to make a correction. I think the foreign investing enterprises in January this year actually has gone up by 74% instead of 40% that I stated earlier. So it's a lot faster growth when it comes to, you know, foreign investors coming back to China and set up enterprises here. Now, going back to your question, I think really, you know, this idea that China's economy has peaked and from this point on, it's either going to plateau or it's going to decline. I think this is either based on really innocent misunderstanding of the Chinese economy, right? Not understanding that we're now trading, you know, sort of the quantity of growth for more quality growth, which, you know, that is really riding in the wall since 2017, right? So I think, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding in terms of, you know, where China is at right now. And I think the other reason that you hear this sort of smearing of Chinese economy is really this sort of a campaign, right, against, I think, in a way to have this kind of, you know, talking down on the confidence of investors or, you know, talking down on the Chinese economy to lower their expectations, because sometimes expectations can be self-fulfilling prophecy. But I think, you know, none of these so-called 4Ds really stand, you know, with empirical tests. So demographics, I think, you know, there's still a long way for China to really see a significant, you know, decline in the labor supply. At the same time, as you just mentioned, China has put on industrial robots to the tune of 268,000 last year, and that is more than the rest of the world combined. So I think, you know, there's way for the Chinese people and the government to plan, right, for this sort of labor shortages. And also, we're not really looking for any sort of population dividend anymore, right? It is more about the talent dividend. When you think about all the educated people that are going into the labor force, and that would, you know, really help to lift the productivity. In terms of deflation, I think, again, that is too premature. We have seen, you know, this first month of 2024, we see the CPI has ticked up. We see the core inflation, for example, has reached 1.2%. So that is really not deflation, even though I think we do have a lot more room for household consumption to increase. But I have the confidence that I think, with income growth, with productivity driven growth, we will likely to see more income and more spending. And then I think, other ones like deleveraging or like debt, I think, again, we're in situation to try to deleverage the real estate sector. And I think, that process is going on, even though it does, drag down the investments in the economy and some consumption. But I don't think this is going to create, a big sort of financial crisis or significant slowdown in the economy, unlike, the Japanese bubble burst and also the United States housing bubble back in 2007, 2008. Now, lastly, I think de-risk and decoupling is interesting. I think on the one hand, there's very scant evidence that, we really see that for example, China is not able to export to the rest of the world, even if, its trade exports to, for example, the United States has seen some decline. But at the same time, we see China's trade with other countries like Mexico, like Vietnam, has gone up by a lot, instead of, also with Belt Road Initiative countries and so on. And de-risking, I think, in some ways, it really just galvanized the Chinese people and government and businesses to really leapfrog in their technological breakthroughs. So I think none of these four Ds really suggest that Chinese economy has come to a peak and only will go down from this point on.
Well, we're speaking with Yan Liang, Professor of Economics, Willamette University, and also Andy Mark, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for China and Globalization. And after a short break, we'll take a look at some latest developments in the AI and chip making industries. Stay with us.
Welcome. I'm Elaf Ellard, economics professor and member of the Data Science and AI Center at New York University, Shanghai. On the World Today program, you can find in-depth and impartial insight, as well as critical commentary on key trends in the Chinese economy, financial technology, business, and blockchain. To prepare for the world tomorrow, join me on World Today.
You're listening to Biz Today. I'm Zhao Yang in Beijing. NVIDIA has unveiled a new super-fast microchip with more than 200 billion transistors. And this is one of several big announcements by the U.S. tech giant at the start of its annual developers conference. It also said it's expanding cooperation with Chinese companies like BYD. Our correspondent Mark New reports.
Silicon Valley-based NVIDIA has become one of the world's most valuable companies because it's been able to design some of the fastest chips available to power artificial intelligence systems. At its annual GTC conference, NVIDIA founder and CEO Jensen Huang unveiled Blackwell, its latest GPU or graphics processing unit chip. Its target market will be companies that have heavy power needs, largely due to generative AI systems. Holding it side by side with its previous generation and smaller GPU called Hopper, Huang says Blackwell has four times the AI training performance capability.
208 billion transistors. And so you could see, I can see, there's a small line between two dies. This is the first time two dies have abutted like this together in such a way that the two dies think it's one chip. There's 10 terabytes of data between it, 10 terabytes per second. It's just one giant chip. And so when we were told that Blackwell's ambitions were beyond the limits of physics, the engineer said, so what?
NVIDIA also showed how its Omniverse platform and AI tools are being used to power digital twins, that is, virtual representations of things like factories, which can be used to simulate and troubleshoot potential problems before they happen in the physical world. Huang also pointed out how Omniverse will run in Apple's Vision Pro headsets, and he also showed how its AI technology will be used to power driverless car systems, including in the world's largest EV maker, Chinese company BYD. And finally, a similar technology from NVIDIA is already being used to help a wide range of humanoid robots become more human-like. Mark Du, CGTN, Palo Alto, California.
So Andy, actually NVIDIA announced a new generation of AI chip, the superchip called Blackwell. So how advanced is this new generation of AI chips, do you think?
Well, this is significant for two reasons, Zhao Yang. So many people are focused on its increase in processing power. And of course, this is useful because, you know, there's a lot of talk about how, you know, you can process, I think it can handle something like 17 trillion parameters, that the more parameters you can handle, the better. And I think generally that is a good thing. But we should also have a little bit of nuance in understanding this. At the same time, a lot of research is going on in how do you make AI, generative AI, more effective without as many parameters. So that being said, I think this is a good thing. But what's, I think, overlooked is the decrease in power consumption. And I think it's something like 20 times that. And what this means then is that it'll reduce costs for many data centers. And what's not widely appreciated is one of the looming constraints for the training of AI models is the use of electricity. And some places in the U.S. are starting to hit that limit, that there just is not enough electricity to run these models. So new developments like Blackwell are also important in this regard. They can make AI capability more broadly available because they use electricity. It's less expensive because it uses less electricity. So I think this is a very, very important development. And I think that this only, I think, underscores a lot of what Jensen Huang has been saying. You know, he calls NVIDIA a company that has reinvented computing. That computing has not changed since the 1960s, and NVIDIA has reinvented this. And if you really understand the implications of what he is saying, this could be, you know, much, much bigger than many people currently expect.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, NVIDIA also said it's expanding the cooperation and collaboration with Chinese EV makers like BYD, like XPeng. So how will the increase in cooperation enhance the development of the self-driving vehicles and AI technology in this, you know, Chinese automakers?
Right. I think this is a very important partnership. I think, you know, with the very powerful GPU and also, like I agree with Andy, with all the energy efficiency, I think this is very powerful to be able to bring up, you know, that sort of automatic driving to a higher level, you know, with the AI, with, you know, the training of all these large scale models. It could really help to enhance the safetiness. And also, you know, the accuracy in terms of, you know, self-driving cars. So I think this kinds of partnership is very important for both sides. And, you know, NVIDIA has over 247 partners in various industries, right, in this tech industries. You know, it has really, I think, built a lot of significant partnership with all these other companies like Google, like Microsoft, like Apple. And I think, you know, these are really kind of win-win, right? The mutual beneficial kind of corporations. And I think that's the same thing with BYD. And I think this is great for BYD, right? Which is right now the biggest EV producers. And if we can partner, you know, if they can partner with NVIDIA, with the high-performing GPU, with the AI technologies, that I think would put would help to bring BYD to the next level, right? In terms of not just EV production, but also self-driving, autonomous driving industry. Now that said, I do think that there's still hurdles. As you kind of remember earlier, when NVIDIA wants to supply China with, you know, two high-performing chips, you know, H20. There has been, you know, pushback by the United States government. So I think, you know, hopefully this kind of partnership will be able to gain sort of not necessarily support from the U.S. politicians, but at least, you know, would not be, you know, would not be prevented from happening, because I think that it's very important for the next generation, both car industries, but also AI industries, because we do need to see the real actual commercialization of these tangible AI applications.
Mm. And so, Andy, among the U.S. government's restrictions on chip exports to China, NVIDIA, it seems that they value the China market so much. So why is that?
Well, China is an enormous market. And, you know, the business model for chip companies is they need to maximize sales in order to continue investing very significant amounts of revenue, you know, upwards of 20% of their revenue into R&D to develop the next generation of chips and to remain competitive. So I think this is the reason NVIDIA's partnership with BID, and I certainly hope I'm wrong, because these partnerships, of course, benefit NVIDIA, benefit BYD, but they benefit the world because, again, the ability to have sustainable energy vehicles as widely adopted as possible, to have autonomous driving are all very good things, and many, many millions of Americans would benefit as well. But I think it's very interesting, too, that BYD produces an electric vehicle that sells for about $11,000. And when you look at the tax credits available in the U.S. of $7,500 for buying an electric vehicle, that if BYD were allowed to sell in the United States, many Americans would be able to buy an electric vehicle for about $3,000. That is mind-boggling when you think about it. And the only thing keeping Americans from enjoying this really amazing benefit is the paranoia of some American politicians.
Well, we're speaking with Andy Mok, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for China and Globalization, and also Yan Liang, Professor of Economics, Willamette University. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Biz Today. I'm Zhao Yang in Beijing. Thank you so much for listening.